Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit us up at the new text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Save that in your phone as Locked On Bulls. While you're listening to the show, enjoy it with us. Interact with us through that text line if you don't like using social media. Once again, that's 331-979-1369. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well as all the content over at FanRag Sports, doing great and big things over there. While we're talking about social media real quick, I don't know if a lot of you caught this at the end of the show or saw it on social media last night, but we are giving away an autographed picture of Kirk Heinrich, Chicago Bulls legend, as we sort of stamped that yesterday.
Absolutely stamped it. Bulls legend for sure.
So we're giving away a Kirk Heinrich framed autographed picture, Kirk Heinrich. So if you want to enter for that contest, it's simple. Go to Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, retweet and follow us. You'll be automatically entered to win. We'll be pulling that drawing and announcing the winner on Friday's show. So make sure you go ahead and do that. Easy, quick way, and you could be the winner and take home a nice signed Kirk Heinrich picture. It's pretty cool, actually. So if you've got like a desk area or somewhere where you keep sports memorabilia, or you just really like Kirk Heinrich, this is definitely the thing for you. So it's really nice, actually. So hopefully, whoever ends up winning that will be not only a Kirk Heinrich fan, but maybe it could even be Kansas fans. We saw some Kansas fans retweeting that today as well. But Matt, what's going on? Did you watch the Knicks and the Bulls last night? What did you think about the game? And are you breathing sort of a sigh of relief after last night?
A little bit of a sigh of relief. I thought that if the Bulls played well, they certainly would have had a chance to beat the Knicks, because the Knicks are certainly not world beaters. After the departure of Kristaps Porzingis, lost for the season with that injury. This one was pretty self-explanatory. This Bulls team this season has been getting wins on the nights when they manage to shoot well, particularly their role players and their guys that they are looking to hit from three-point range. And they, last night against the Knicks, shot 3 of 30. 3 of 30 from downtown. And that's good for 10%. That's a pretty quick, fast math for you. 10% from beyond the arc with 30 attempts. And, I mean, it's pretty much what Coach Fred Hoiberg said after the game. He's like, if the shots aren't falling for you, it can get ugly. That's basically what he said. And that was the matter of it last night. I mean, there weren't really any noteworthy performances. Portis had a strong game in just 25 minutes off the bench. I feel like Hoiberg maybe didn't want to overuse Portis because he knew, and the Bulls know, that it was an important loss to get, even though they won't admit it. Vonleh had a couple of nice things in this game. Campaign had a great start. He kind of cooled off. He only ended up going 2 of 12 from the field, but he did have 6 assists, some of which I was actually pretty impressed by. But across the board, and then, of course, Felicio had that super hot third quarter. A career-high 17 for him and a career-high 8 made field goals. But other than that, this was just an ugly game where the Bulls did not shoot the ball well.
Yeah, Cristiano Felicio had a really nice block on Emmanuel Mudiay, who, by the way, Emmanuel Mudiay, good thing the Knicks didn't give up a whole lot for that guy, because I just don't see it. And I don't know why they're not starting their their draft pick from last year, Frank Ntilikina. Ntilikina, is that how you say it? Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina. Wow, I can't say that.
Today, Junior!
Regardless, I'm surprised he's not playing in there. I know they mixed it up a little bit. He came off the bench and had 24 points. Trey Burke played a little bit of minutes too. He had 21 in this one. A lot of kind of college staples. If you're a college basketball fan, the Knicks have a lot of those guys that you can kind of point out and remember as college stars. Tim Hardaway Jr., though, for the Knicks played really well. But like I said, Cristiano Felicio with that really nice block, that chase down block on Emmanuel Mudiay, as well as Antonio Blakeney. I was actually somewhat surprised by Antonio Blakeney. Is, like I said, the confidence from this guy is just, it doesn't matter what the Bulls are doing or what spot he's in, because he's going out there and just chucking up shots. He was 4 for 12. He got to the free throw line a ton, though. He was 7 for 7 from the free throw line. Ended up with 16 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, and a block. So that coming off the bench. Like you had said, though, Portis and Vonleh, I thought, had a pretty nice night. They had that one stretch where I think the Bulls went about 6 or 7 minutes, and Portis and Vonleh had 14 combined points, and those were the only Bulls points. Just a really slow start from the Bulls off in this first half. 18 points in the first quarter, and then 19 in the second. They tried to make a little bit of a pushback, but the Knicks, well, they did enough to pull out this win. And it's funny because, Matt, I was looking just curious to see what Knicks fans are even thinking at this point with this team and with everything that happened with Kristaps Porzingis and just kind of the turmoil that they're in. And they're the most frustrated. I think they're more frustrated in what's going on there in New York than the Bulls fans are here. And I guess I have to tell Bulls fans this, to take a look at what the Knicks are right now and be very mindful that a few bad moves, an injury here or there, and what the Bulls are trying to put together right now could potentially turn into that. I'm hoping it doesn't, but for me, I had a little bit of an anxiety attack because it was a flash forward maybe 2 or 3 years down the road here, and I was looking at that New York Knicks team as like sort of this Bulls team would look if everything went wrong maybe 2 or 3 years down the road. But other than that, I felt like this game, it helped me breathe a little bit of sigh of relief. The Bulls now are a game and a half up on the New York Knicks for that eighth spot. A little bit of movement between the Nets and the Sacramento Kings can go on in the next 12 games. But anything else from this game that was standout for you?
You mentioned the fact that Blakeney did manage to get to the free throw line a lot in this game, and I did like some of the aggression I saw out of him. Also, he had, you mentioned Felicio's chase down block. How about the block that Blakeney had? I mean, it was kind of a scary moment because he had a pretty hard, aggressive, and awkward fall, but the block that he had, he was coming over playing a little bit of help defense and just jumped out of the building. And I know that if you're somebody who's watched the Windy City Bulls play at least a little bit this season when Blakeney has been absolutely dominating in the G League, you know that what this kid has is some pretty, you know, unlimited potential as far as his athleticism. And that was on display with that block in particular. I mean, I don't know what his vertical jump is, but in that block, he looked like he was several feet off the ground going to make that block. So I was impressed by that. You mentioned the Nets and the Kings maybe catchable. The Nets did beat the Grizzlies last night, so that helps the Bulls out. The Nets now have 23 wins compared to the Bulls' 24. The Kings did lose to Detroit last night, but of course, I mean, circle those immensely important games in the last week of the schedule for the Bulls. They play the Brooklyn Nets twice. That could very well determine whether the Bulls are picking, say, 7th or maybe 6th. So, or, you know, 7th as opposed to 8th. Other than that, in this game, I guess another point of note is that after his crazy lights-out shooting against Cleveland to keep the Bulls in that game on Saturday, Denzel Valentine fell back to earth, 0-4 from downtown, 4 of 11 overall, in 22 minutes as a starter.
You bring up the Brooklyn Nets, that series, especially at the end of the stretch here, where the Bulls have to play them twice in the final three games of the season. And I'm looking right now at the Brooklyn Nets schedule, and they have the Raptors, the Cavaliers, the Magic, the Heat, Pistons, 76ers, Bucks, the Bulls twice, and the Celtics. All but one of those teams, well, I guess the Pistons too, they're a fringe. They're kind of one of those teams that's sitting right now at 14 or 15th pick in the draft. Ones that are just kind of outside looking in the Eastern Conference. But outside of them and the Orlando Magic, who are god-awful, all the rest of those teams are playoff teams besides the Bulls. So immensely, immensely important. It's going to come down to those two games at the end, I have a feeling. The only thing that gives me a little bit of a sigh of relief, and hopefully maybe the Bulls can push themselves up to that seven spot or potentially even that six spot, is what the Sacramento Kings have in terms of their schedule coming up at the end of the season here. They have the Hawks, the Celtics, the Mavericks, the Pacers, Warriors, Lakers, Suns, Grizzlies, Spurs, and Rockets. So right off the bat there, you've got the Grizzlies, Suns, Mavericks, Hawks, all teams, and even the Lakers, all teams that if the Kings play well on that night can knock off any of those teams. So a softer schedule for the Kings, rather than the Nets. So we could see some movement there. We're just hoping that maybe the New York Knicks too don't all of a sudden go on another 10-game slide like they did to finish the season. Bulls keep putting away these nice games where they're collecting themselves for three and a half quarters. But yeah, take as many losses as you can. And that's what I was going to ask you, Matt. Do you feel like this sitting Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and then putting Chris Dunn in a walking boots, even though they're only listed day-to-day, is sort of this nudging of, all right, we're going to be extra careful about talking about the T word, tanking, we don't say that. But is it at the same time, is it like, okay, we're just, so if we can't sit healthy, active players, then we're just going to find some type of ailment and give them rest? Is that what we're kind of seeing here now? Or is this Chris Dunn thing a little bit more serious than maybe other people think?
I'm hoping that it's not actually a serious injury, and I'm it's listed as turf toe, right? Like, that's officially what the problem is with Chris Dunn.
Isn't that what Carlos Boozer had when he was here? Was that a year he spent with battling turf toe?
Yeah.
And that's not fun. And I think Joakim Noah even had it at one point as a Bull.
Well, I know Joakim suffered from pretty severe plantar fasciitis, which is different from turf toe. Joakim may have had turf toe in addition to plantar fasciitis at some point, but I think you're right, Boozer did as well. And for as silly and inconsequential of an injury as it sounds for, like, very strong, grown men, professional athletes, I mean, it can sideline NFL players as well as NBA players. It is apparently extremely painful. So hopefully Chris Dunn, like, stubbed his toe or maybe has a very mild case of turf toe, and they're just being overly cautious because the, you know, as much as this Bulls coaching staff would love to get at least a handful of games more with Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen playing together, because we've talked about the chemistry issues that exist there, specifically with LaVine and Dunn and who's running the offense. Because we still have only had, I think, 12 games this season when those three have started together. That's not a lot as you're trying to evaluate what you hope is the core of your team moving forward. But at this point, I think the Bulls front office is very aware that getting those three to play a few more games together at this point in the season is probably not as vitally important as getting the highest possible pick that you can in this upcoming draft. It sucks that that's the truth of the matter, but that's the truth of the matter. So what I am hoping is the case is that Dunn, they are being overly careful with whatever this toe injury is, just like they were overly careful in not bringing Zach LaVine back until months after he said he felt like he was ready to come back. And they're still not having him play in the, you know, either front or end of a back-to-back set of games. And I'm hoping that the same is true for the Markkanen and LaVine injuries that have cropped up most recently, and that the Bulls are being extra, extra careful, because what they really want to do in these last 10 games is lose all 10.
Yeah, I'm not ready to freak out about Chris Dunn yet, but it's just kind of like one of those things this season where seems like he gets in there, he gets sort of on a roll, and then an injury happens. The finger early on in the season, the freak accident on the dunk against the Warriors, and now he's sitting out with this turf toe. I'm not raising any flags yet, but it is kind of concerning when your starting point guard, especially your young, healthy starting point guard, isn't healthy and isn't playing stretches of games. So I'm not ready to say anything about that, but I'm just saying that's something to keep an eye on as we keep going here. It's just these weird freak accidents that are happening to Chris Dunn that are sidelining him.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that Dunn hasn't really been able to put together a full 82-game season in his first year here, because there were stretches when he was playing consecutive games, starting consecutive games, and the Bulls had a little bit more of a team around him, you know, before they traded Nico before they decided to sit Lopez and Holiday in favor of getting the young guys some minutes when Chris Dunn running this offense looked pretty decent. I mean, not necessarily convinced anybody that he's a future all-star, but at least better than the people, than the version of Chris Dunn who everybody labeled as a draft bust last year. So
I think Chris Dunn really misses Robin Lopez in there. I'm just throwing that out there because I felt like him and Robin Lopez had pretty solid chemistry, especially in the pick and roll, and I think that's where Chris Dunn really thrived. And then throwing in the loop and the wrench in Zach LaVine and sort of commanding more of the offense, I think that's sort of where you've seen the dip in production from Chris Dunn, especially over these last, I would say, 6-8 weeks, and especially since Robin Lopez has been limited to only 12 minutes a game. So I feel like there's some things to figure out there, but yeah, the injuries just have me kind of, I'm not worried about it. It's just kind of disappointing that these weird freak accidents with the hand and now with the turf toe.
Well, and yeah, but and like the, you know, he missed whatever it was, like 2 or 3 weeks with that concussion from when he took that nasty fall on the dunk. Like that's, you know, that's not a guy who was injury prone. That's just a freak accident.
Absolutely.
So to me, it's weird that it's sort of, you know, all of this has piled up to a season where Chris Dunn has missed a significant amount of time. But I don't think it's the I don't think the issue is, oh, this is a young guy who is injury prone and he's going to be an injury concern and an injury risk moving forward as the Bulls try to make him a part of their core. I think this year was just kind of fluky in the ways that he got hurt.
But I am very curious about this summer. We talk about how this is an important summer for the front office, but a majorly important summer for Markkanen, LaVine, and Dunn to work together and figure some things out. We're going to take a break here on Locked On Bulls. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors with This Week in Bulls History.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, Matt, This Week in Bulls History, kick us off here. What do you have for us today on Tuesday, second to last week of March? Yeah, second to last week of March here already, heading into the first day of spring. What do you got for us today?
Well, this one is, of course, a fan favorite among Bulls Nation. March 19, 1995, one day after sending through his agent a two-word fax saying just the two words, "I'm back," MJ, donning a red Bulls 45 jersey, joins the Bulls in Indiana for his first game back after returning from retirement after his 1.5-year stint in baseball playing with the Birmingham Barons in the Chicago White Sox program. And starts off pretty rusty. I think he missed his first 4 or 5 field goal attempts in this game against the Pacers. Does get things going as the game progresses. I'm pretty sure his stat line as he finished was 19 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. The Bulls did lose the game in OT. And then, of course, just a week or so later, he had his double nickel game at the Garden, you know, where he dropped 55. And sort of everybody was on notice as, oh, okay, Michael Jordan is back, and he still definitely is really, really good at this whole basketball thing. But so, yeah, this week, yesterday was the anniversary of that, his first game back, joining the Bulls in the second half of that 94-95 season, which the Bulls would go on to lose in the second round to the Orlando Magic. A lot of people kind of gloss over that when they think of the return of MJ, and a lot of people like to just fast forward to the 95-96 season that was, of course, historic and record-breaking 72-10 season, you know, steamrolling their way through the playoffs and beating the Sonics to get their fourth championship of the franchise. But I vividly remember exactly where I was when I heard the news that he was coming back. I remember sitting in the living room of my parents' house watching this Bulls-Pacers game just like a kid on Christmas morning, just so uncontrollably excited that after all of the rumors and talk about would MJ come back, would MJ come back, to actually see him on a basketball court in a Bulls jersey again was probably one of the happiest moments of my life.
I think I speak for all of the millennial fans out there that I wish I was old enough to remember a moment like that. I remember more the back end of Jordan's career, but I speak for all the millennial. I guess there's a split between millennials. You've got the millennials that are between 18 and 25, and then you've got the ones that are 26, between 26 and 36 or 38. So I guess I speak for all of those millennials out there that are around the age of 25, 24, 25, or younger than I am, that we didn't get the pleasure of seeing that. But could you even imagine something like this happening in today's day and age? Like, let's say, for example, LeBron did something like this, where LeBron left off the peak of winning, what, the second championship in Miami and said, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to go retire and go do something else. I'm going to go play soccer. I'm going to go play football for a year. And then coming back, could you just imagine the absolute social media explosion? Like, I'm pretty sure that would be one of the few things that I can think of that would absolutely break the internet if LeBron had retired and then come back, and especially in the fashion that Michael did, sending out just a fax at the time, or if he just simply sent out a tweet or an Instagram post. Could you imagine what the internet would do?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that. I was remembering this earlier this morning, and the fact that all of the crazy Michael Jordan and Bulls dynasty drama happened in the days before social media and before Twitter. Just saying, you know, hypothetically, what if LeBron were to retire and leave and go play a different sport and then come back? And what I kept thinking about was especially leading up to NBA trade deadlines and during the first few days of NBA free agency, when like a high profile NBA player or maybe even an NBA star just puts like a pair of side glancing eyeballs Twitter emoji out there, and everybody's like, oh my God, what's happening? What's going on? That's what I kind of was thinking about. Like, I so wish. I mean, it's kind of twofold, and I so enjoy that I did catch the tail end of growing up in a, you know, in a world, in a childhood where life and everyone's social lives were not controlled by social media and technology and smartphones, and we actually were just kids who ran around and played outside and didn't have a cell phone in our pocket. And I loved that. I love that I caught the tail end of that. But I still, looking back at this, am thinking, wow, how great would it have been just to see the Twitter and social media reaction of Michael Jordan coming back? Because even in that time, in the mid-90s, before any of this stuff existed, it was 24/7 coverage on SportsCenter and 24/7 coverage everywhere, and everybody in Chicago was freaking out about it. I just can't even imagine what the impact on social media would be.
All right, so for my This Week in Bulls history, I'm going away from a game, actually. This is more towards the front office, but the late, great Jerry Krause was hired and named as the vice president of basketball operations on March 25th, 1985. So Jerry Krause, obviously a polarizing figure in Chicago, not only for being a part of building these teams, but I felt like there was a split between a lot of Chicago fans, especially after a few championships. The decisions that were made by Krause, or things that Michael Jordan didn't necessarily like. And I came across this one, and like I said, again, just reading over all of this history that had happened between this team, the one thing that stuck out to me, and for the younger fans out there that don't know about this, and was particularly the Charles Oakley trade that Jerry Krause had made. This is from...
Oh, yeah. MJ grilled Krause for that trade. He hated it. He didn't want to lose Oakley.
The craziest thing about this is this is coming from an article from the Tribune. It said that Jordan despised the trade not only because of the players that were involved, obviously at this time Charles Oakley going to New York for Bill Cartwright, but it says that the players were involved, but also because of how they learned about it. So they learned on TV that actually Charles Oakley was getting traded to the New York Knicks at the same time, on the same flight as Michael Jordan, on their way to Las Vegas to see a Mike Tyson fight. So I don't know if anybody knew about that, or if that's just me showing how young I am and I didn't know about that story. But pretty crazy to learn about a trade for somebody that you maybe were even a close teammate with, just learning about about that via TV before anybody even said anything. I think about it similarly to the Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade trade just last year when they were both vacationing in Paris. Obviously, Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade both knew what was going on at the time, but same scenario. Could you imagine if social media wasn't around and all this talk about Jimmy Butler getting traded and then all of a sudden him and Dwayne Wade are there thinking they're going to make another run at this at whatever the Bulls were trying to do last year, and learns that he is shipped off for some young assets and going to Minnesota. I think it would be just as crazy. I think we would have got a different reaction from Jimmy Butler than maybe the one that we did get with social media being around.
And it's it's something that Jordan always nagged at and picked at Jerry Krause. He was the punching bag of the organization. Even in Jordan's Hall of Fame induction speech, he took a shot at Jerry and brought up the whole organizations win championships, like to hell with that, players win championships. And I think there are valid elements to both sides of that argument. I don't think there's one, you know, holistically right and one completely wrong side of that argument, but you cannot discredit all of the things that Krause did for this organization. And it's, you know, it's kind of random that this is the anniversary of the week that he was hired as the and promoted as the Bulls general manager, because it's also the anniversary of the 1 year anniversary of his death. Krause died March 21st, 2017. So a year ago tomorrow was when Jerry Krause passed away, and then was finally posthumously inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame in that class shortly after his death. But not only the trade that got Bill Cartwright, and the Bulls don't win that first three-peat without Bill Cartwright, he traded and got Dennis Rodman for Will Perdue straight up. And look, no offense to Will Perdue, a good NBA player, a guy who I, you know, enjoy watching in his various forms of NBA and Bulls coverage these days, a very nice man, but Dennis Rodman is a Hall of Famer. Will Perdue was not. Dennis Rodman was still an elite defensive player and rebounder for the Bulls' second three-peat. Will Perdue was neither of those things. Tony Kukoc, do the Bulls win that second set of three championships without Tony Kukoc as their sixth man, perennial sixth man of the year candidate? Absolutely not. So many other role players and pieces that Krause was able to build around Pippen and Jordan two different times for six total championships. Anytime I see people giving Krause crap on Twitter or when I'm talking to Bulls fans who don't appreciate him, it just drives me crazy. Because yes, Jordan was an amazing talent, one of the best, if not the best, that the professional basketball world has ever seen. And Pippen was an incredible sidekick. Phil Jackson, great head coach. But Krause is the one who built those teams.
You know what drives me crazy is you brought it up exactly, that shortly after Jerry Krause had passed, that he was put into the Basketball Hall of Fame. They did that similar thing to Ron Sano. I'm not even a Cubs fan, but I love Ron Sano. And it drove me absolutely nuts about how much the guy cared about baseball and how much he cared about the Chicago Cubs and how important he was to the Chicago Cubs. And as a third baseman in Major League Baseball, he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, but for whatever reason, because he had a little bit of an outlandish personality for that time, doing the heel clicks, people didn't like that sort of thing, and that was sort of like that old mantra. And then until he passed, he was elected into the Hall of Fame. But I just remember, like, watching videos of Ron Sano sitting there on the days where they would call for the Hall of Fame and he would never get that call. I feel like for a lot, especially towards the end of Jerry Krause's time with the Chicago Bulls, he kind of got a lot of negative flack, especially from people who were just obsessed and in love with Michael Jordan, and anything he said or did, just it was never wrong. And I feel like that's what kind of overshadowed some of Jerry Krause's things. And then, of course, when he passes away, then he gets the honor to go into it. So, like, a little piece of advice for any Hall of Fame, and I get it's just a museum. It, like, literally, if we're going to put it down to the basics, they're all just museums to make money for people to go see. But for the committees, like, if the guy is deserving enough and you have some type of grudge, or these writers that vote them in have some type of grudge, let the guys in, because you're going to do it when they pass away anyway, and it's not as meaningful. So, but that's just kind of the connection I made between him and Ron Sano, of just the induction to the Hall of Fame after their deaths is just, it irritates me in a weird
way. Yeah, no, that's a valuable and totally legitimate comparison to make. And in Krause's case, it's really unfortunate and pretty ridiculous that it took them that long. I mean, it was long overdue when they finally inducted Krause into the Hall of Fame last year. Long overdue. They could have inducted him well before that. And the guy's resume stood and stood as it was. And I know that the rebuild, the immediate post-Jordan years that Krause stuck around for, 5 years, I want to say, through 2003, those were some tough years. And he didn't necessarily have success in those years trying to get the Bulls back on the right track. But who cares? I mean, the meat and potatoes of his resume, building multiple versions of a team that won 6 championships in 8 years, and all the scouting talent that was on his resume, all of the drafting talent that was on his resume, all of the amazing trades that he pulled off, dude should have been in the Hall years ago. And it's a shame that, it's a really fascinating tell-all interview that he gave, just a few months before his death, talking about what the Hall meant to him, and him saying, it's something that I want for my kids and my grandkids, and, I want my family to be able to, to see my picture in the Hall there and feel proud. And you know that it would have meant a lot to Jerry to be able to be at that induction ceremony with his family. And it really sucks that he wasn't able.
All right, Matt, as we wrap up the show here, I've got one last thing for you. And you might think I'm crazy at the beginning, so just hear me out here. But the first question I've got to ask you, is it totally and absolutely insane for me to think that after this summer, there is a slight possibility that the Bulls could push to try and be a low-seeded playoff team next year? Is that crazy for me to say?
No, it's not crazy. I mean, you think about all the close games that the Bulls lost early in the season when they started 3-20 and didn't really have a closer yet, didn't have LaVine on the court yet. Chris Dunn was still trying to get himself comfortable. Chris Dunn was out, with the hand injury, and Jaren Grant was out there trying to close games. You think about all those losses that they piled up early. You think about some of the losses in winnable games that they've had since then, and you think about what hopefully will be a strong level of development between collectively some of the young guys on this roster that are going to be back next season, and optimistically looking at Markkanen in year two, Dunn in year three, LaVine having a full season, a healthy training season, a healthy offseason and training camp where he's not worried about rehabbing an ACL, but just improving his game. And that being something that he is able to do. And you look at still the ongoing weakness of the Eastern Conference everywhere else around the Bulls. And as much as it's not necessarily something that I'm hoping for, I don't think it's at all out of the realm of possibility that the Bulls can find themselves being a team that is somewhere between 30 and 40 wins next year fighting for the 7th or 8th seed. I think that's absolutely possible.
Take a ride with me for a second here. So I'm thinking back to just all the things the front office had said, what they've collected as far as on the court this year. So the first piece of evidence for me is you brought up the fact that the Eastern Conference is still relatively weak. And if you look at the tanking teams 1 through 14, the majority are sitting in the Eastern Conference. And now you bring in the factor that you don't really know what LeBron James is going to do. If LeBron James decides that LA is going to be his new home or somewhere in the Western Conference, you completely eliminate the fact that LeBron is there pushing you out of the way. You have a couple teams that are young and rising in this Eastern Conference, but even when the Bulls were trying to collectively put together a team to lose as many possible games this year, they fought. And a lot of guys turned out to be way better than we thought. Another, I guess, a piece of evidence would be the ongoing feeling that I feel like Robin Lopez is going to be here long term. When I say long term, probably another 2-3 years, it seems like the Bulls really like him. And from the reports I'm seeing from Casey Johnson and a few other guys around the league, it seems like that relationship has been mended. And unless the Bulls are like completely blown away this summer, Robin Lopez is probably going to be around here. So we're getting to the point now where now the Bulls sit between what? It's going to be between maybe best case scenario, you're at 6, and worst case scenario, you're at 10 drafting this year. That's not good enough to get any of the two centers or big men that you would want to play the 5. So you've got Robin Lopez there. If the Bulls take a wing here between 6 and 10, you have your starting 5 in Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, the wing that the Bulls maybe will take at 7 or 8. Then you have Lowry Markkanen and Robin Lopez, and you've got Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis off the bench. The Bulls make some savvy signings here, or trade away a couple guys to try to get young assets to this team, or sign somebody unexpected. Like, I think this Bulls team right now, and I feel like fans are not looking forward enough to think that the front office said that they want to be in the lottery the least amount of years as possible. They don't want to hang around here. That's why I feel like guys like Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez probably going to stick around next year, and they're going to try and figure out a way to make this team competitive. And like you had said, all those guys that came over in this first year, and it'll be the first time we get a good look at Zach LaVine over a course of an entire year. If these guys find a way to put it together this summer and find some chemistry, especially Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, like this could be a lot different team that we're looking at next year. And that's not me just, you know, all of a sudden hopping on the Sea Red Fred bus, but it's putting things in perspective that, like, this team isn't as bad as some of the other teams around this league. And I would imagine the Bulls don't want to sit in this position next year where they're hanging around between 8 and 10 like Charlotte has done for the last, what, 6, 7, 8 years. So to me, I feel like this is going to be a move, and I don't know if it's going to piss fans off or not, but don't be surprised if the Bulls end up trying to really push for an 8 or a 7 seed next year. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, but the pieces that the Bulls have are a lot better than some of those other teams, especially in the Eastern Conference. You take away that 3-20 start from the Bulls, say even they go 500, the Bulls are at 31-38. They're a Pistons level team. They're 4 games back from that 8 seed behind Milwaukee. Just kind of put that in perspective. So I thought maybe I was taking crazy pills this morning. Maybe my roommates had dropped something in my coffee this morning. But as the more I thought about it, the more I'm going, I don't think this team's going to be in the lottery next year. Like, if I had to put bets on it right now, probably bet on the opposite side of it than say the lottery.
I mean, look, there's still a totally legitimate chance that the Bulls are going to be in the late lottery next season. And it largely depends on if the main players on their roster can stay healthy, knock on wood, and what the other teams do, specifically other, you know, weak teams in the Eastern Conference that the Bulls will be playing frequently. And sort of in line with what you said, I don't necessarily see any of these other tanking teams getting a whole lot better next season, whereas I think of these teams, the Bulls might have the most potential to improve upon their win total from this year going into next year. That said, I'm not expecting some gigantic leap, but you are right in saying that Paxton said from the beginning, we're not trying to make this a multi-year tanking experience where we are in the top of the lottery for several seasons consecutively. We want this to be a rebuild on the fly. We're excited about the young pieces we got in the Butler trade, and we're going to look forward to being competitive again sooner rather than later. So that's their plan. And to them, and this is something that you can, you know, either credit or criticize the Bulls front office for, to them, competitive has a pretty wide definition. And if they make the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed, as they did last season, and, you know, played in that 1-8 series against Boston, they saw that as a competitive season. So it largely depends on what your definition, Mr. and Mrs. Bulls Nation, are out there. What is your definition of competitive? If it's the Bulls hovering between late lottery and 8th seed in a first-round playoff exit, that's one thing. To me, the Chicago Bulls being competitive means nothing other than the Bulls are making a run through at least this first round of the playoffs and are at least in the outside of a conversation of championship contenders, because that is the criteria. That is the standard that has been set for this once proud franchise. You want to use the word competitive? You're talking about the Bulls making deep playoff runs, because that's what Bulls fans expect. So you're not wrong, Jordan. You're not taking crazy pills when you look at this team, look at the roster, you look at the rest of the league and say, this Bulls team might be borderline playoff, you know, a team sniffing a playoff spot next year. That's totally within the realm of possibility. My counterpoint to that would be, in the eyes of most Bulls fans, that does not count as being competitive.
You're right. The only thing I can think of, too, to add on to top of this, in why the Bulls would press to make the playoffs next year, all things would have to go right. And this is stacking up a few different things. Lauri Markkanen takes that next step we need him to take. The chemistry between Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn gets a hell of a lot better. Zach LaVine comes back down to earth in terms of his awful defense, comes sort of towards the mean, towards the average. He takes another step in his development. Maybe you find something in Portis where it's another season and you can count on somebody like that. Robin Lopez is going to do his thing, and if Justin Holliday's still on this roster, he's going to do his thing as well. The only thing I could think of in terms of if the Bulls do decide to spend a little bit of money or add contributors to this team this summer, I'm not talking big money or anything supersize to that factor, but just to make them a little bit more competitive, would be to appeal to superstars in 2019 in that offseason. Would be saying, you know, instead of, oh, you know, we haven't made the playoffs in 2 years with this tanking thing, we need you to help us make that appearance. They can say, they can go to a superstar and say, hey, look, this is the young core that we have. We have this right in front of you. We made a playoff. We made it to the playoffs, to the eighth or the seventh seed without you. This is where you can take us with you. So maybe that's sort of the idea the front office has in terms of maybe making that next level push. And maybe I'm a year ahead of that. Maybe that's 2019 going into 2020. But that's the only thing that I could add on top of that as why the Bulls could make that push towards the playoffs and maybe can potentially add pieces that would help contribute them. But they're still a long way off. Like we said, they still need to find pieces that are going to surround this team and figure out chemistry between Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. These guys got to stay healthy too. I think that's the biggest factor of it all. So if they stay healthy too, maybe it's a pitch to a free agent 2019.
Absolutely. All right, George, before we get out of here real quick, I got one for you. Interesting tankathon battle tonight on deck in the NBA. We got the Dallas Mavericks visiting the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, Dallas is fifth in the tankathon standings at 22-48, two games in front of the Bulls at 24-46. Pelicans, meanwhile, have had a bit of a slide and are tied with two other teams at 40-30, half a game behind two teams, one at 40-31, the other at 39-30, and then half a game in front of two other teams at 41-29. So a big crowded bunch there, where the Pelicans are currently 19th in the tankathon standings. Have that pick going towards the Bulls. Would you rather the Pelicans win this game or the Mavs win this game?
I'd rather have the Mavs win this game at this point. Like, two games is a lot to chase, especially when you look at some of these schedules ending the season. Like, we had just rattled off the Nets and the Kings series. I'd rather that Pelicans pick slide as far down towards the teens as possible. So I'd rather see the Pelicans lose this game. We need the 76ers and the Minnesota Timberwolves to finish out the season strong, because there can be a lot of movement between 17 and 19. But like you had said, and like we had said earlier on this week, like, the movement between that 17th pick and the 24th pick is all but a game and a half. So a lot of movement. I'm going with the Pelicans. I'm crossing my fingers Dennis Smith Jr. and our boy Dougie McBuckets can pull something out of their hat tonight and win a game in New Orleans. Is it in New Orleans or is it in Dallas?
It's in New Orleans.
In New Orleans tonight. So I'm that's what I'm hoping for. I feel like that should be the overall consensus as we're looking at the Pelicans schedule for 11 or 12 games.
Would be nice to get have Dallas get a win and Pels get a loss. Hopefully they can slide themselves down to maybe the mid-teens by the time the season's said and done.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're giving away an autographed Kirk Heinrich 8x10 framed photo with a plaque. It's pretty sweet. Go to Twitter at Locked On Bulls to enter. All you have to do is retweet and follow our account. It's super easy. Takes a matter of seconds. Go to Twitter at Locked On Bulls and retweet that. We'll be pulling the winner on Friday. We'll be announcing it on the show on Friday as well. So follow us on Twitter, though, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and over at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Use our text and voicemail line. We're taking mailbag questions tomorrow, so make sure you're doing that for us at 331-979-1369. We have a handful of voicemails to play on tomorrow's show, so keep sending those in. It's been amazing. Same with the text messages. Once again, that's 331 931- 979-1369. 979-1369. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Dashradio.com and the Dash Radio app. For Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. Have a wonderful night, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.